Hello, my name is Lisa Elvin Stoltari, and this is my channel, Have Roots, Will Travel. I'm a genealogist and a passionate traveler. Most of my videos will be about travel or understanding various locations, but in this special series, I'm focusing on the subject that is near and dear to my heart, the study or the story of Les Filles du Roi, or the King's Daughters. In this series, I'll be focusing on individual biographies so that we can get to know as many of these amazing women as we can. Please let me know in the comments below if there's one Fille du Roi in particular you're interested in, and I'll try to move her to the front of the line. And please don't forget to subscribe to the channel, click on the notifications alert, and like this video. All of the above helps me out. Let's get started, shall we? Now, Les Filles du Roi was a program started by Jean Talon in 1663, and I go into great depth about this in the video I produced that's on this channel called Les Filles du Roi, the program 2.0. Check that out so you can get to know as much detail as possible about the program, how the girls were recruited, how they came across, what happened once they got here. All of that is contained within that video. And I think it'll give you a lot of background info and insight into your particular ancestor. Now, the Fille du Roi that we will be featuring today is Marie Martin, who happens to be my 8 times great grandmother. Let's get to know a little bit about Marie. Marie was baptized on January 9th in 1649 in the parish of Notre Dame de Cogne. She was baptized at the Sainte Marguerite Church. La Rochelle, where she was born, was founded during the 10th century and became an important harbor in the 12th century. Until the 15th century, La Rochelle was to be the largest French harbor on the Atlantic coast, dealing mainly in wine, salt, and cheese, all the good stuff. The name was first recorded in 961 as Rupella, from a Latin diminutive meaning little rock. La Rochelle has one of the richest histories of all the towns of France, from its beginnings in an area where the Knights of Templar had their strongest base to when Eleanor married Henry, who became Henry II in 1154, and thus putting La Rochelle under English rule, until Louis VIII captured it about 80 years later, 1224. During the English control of the city, Henry II had the Beauclerc Castle built, the remains of which are still visible in the Place de Verdun in La Rochelle. From 1568, La Rochelle became a center for the Huguenots. It was in La Rochelle that the Protestant revolts occurred and created the uprising that would become known as the Siege of La Rochelle. Throughout the 1600s, the Huguenots were expelled from La Rochelle, and I don't know if Marie was a Huguenot. It's possible. But when I learned the church where she was baptized used to have or welcome both Protestant and Catholic, that gave me a clue. The fact that they would have gone to being Catholic, but had been open to a church that had that. That's interesting. And also the fact that her brother Washim, left for Canada in 1656. I think the fact that her last name is Martin, that gives me, it's a typical English name. So there's a lot of I would say clues that point to the possibility of that. But no matter, once she decided to go to New France, she would have had to become a Catholic because you could not live in New France without converting to Catholicism. So once her brother left for Canada and her parents died, it was now Marie's turn. Marie arrived on the Saint-Jean-Baptiste de Dieppe on June 18, 1665. I've inserted the map to indicate the distance she would have had to travel from La Rochelle to Dieppe, 334 miles, almost a full day's drive by car today. But in 1665, it would have taken many days, if not weeks. To my 20th century 21st century brain, I'm thinking, why not just get a boat near to home? Well, a quick check led me to the answer. There were no ships scheduled for La Rochelle that entire year, and the next one to sail would have been in 1667. If she needed to leave for New France, and I'm thinking she did, she would have needed to sign up and go where they told her the ship was. This particular ship held 90 feet of water, so it was one of the bigger ones. In fact, we've seen a few of my other great grandmothers hang out here. You know, they're hanging out with her. And so we have Margaret Abraham from video number 22, Catherine Girard from video 20, and Anne Lamara, 17, video number 17, who joined her on this ship. So who knows? Did they hang out? Time will tell. And remember, we have in French an expression called ne pour tricoter, to knit or weave. And so as we're weaving the story of the Fées du Roi, we are going to notice how many times their lives intersect, not only on a ship bound for New France, but also once they reach that promised land. So the groom she selected, his name was Jean Vallée, de La Vallée. When I first originally started working on Jean Vallée's profile, much of the information said he came from Rouen. As I dug a little deeper, the town of Saint-Saëns appeared a few times in contracts in New France associated with Jean's older brother Pierre, and Jean's marriage contract, which also states that he comes from there. So let's review Saint-Saëns, which, by the way, is more like a movie within a movie. It was an Irish monk, Sidonius Saint, who was the first abbot of the monastery that was built in 674 on the hill that is where the current village is located. By 839, it was destroyed by those fearless Vikings. So it was, of course, rebuilt. So by the 11th century, the seigneurs of Saint-Saëns were very prominent. One of them would become governor of Rouen, and another would be at that Battle of Hastings. So by 1127, King Henry I of England outlawed the monastery for having sheltered a rebel Norman. So eventually, the seigneurs would build a castle and a church, which would become the Benedictine Abbey of Saint-Wenrille. The castle and the village were looted and burned by the English and the Burgundians in 1450, and again by Henry IV of France in 1592. In the 14th century, the town was famous for its drapes, its blacksmiths, its potters, and its cutlery. And glassmaking started here in 1450 and was active until 1807. The tanneries were well known up until the 19th century. So this is kind of where he's coming from. His parents, Pierre Vallée and Madeleine Dumesnil, are, I don't know if they passed away before he left, but certainly they are natives of that area. So she arrives, he's already there. What happened? Jean's brother Pierre and Jean would leave for New France from Dieppe sometime around 1657. They were most likely indentured servants for about 3 years, and they were confirmed, which is another way of saying they were released from their contracts. So this is how Jean got to New France. And once there, he meets up with Marie, and he's got some money put aside, I'm sure, I'm hoping. And they were married on February 4th, 1666. This is the actual marriage record. You'll know that the name of Jean's birthplace is not written, which is unusual. It's very unusual. It's the first one I actually have seen. But we now know it is a suburb of Lorraine. Now, where did they settle? They settled in Île d'Orléans. And let's review a little bit of Île d'Orléans. It's located in the St. Lawrence River, which is about 3 miles east of downtown Quebec City. The island was one of the first parts of the province to be colonized by the French, and a large percentage of French Canadians can trace their ancestry back to the early residents of the island. The island really is and has been described by others as the microcosm of traditional Quebec and as the birthplace of Francophones in North America. I have to tell you that as I've gone through this series myself, I'm stunned by how many roots are having planted in at Eudoxia, making it my number one thing to go and visit. Having lived my entire life in Quebec, and then moving away, I just had no idea that Eudoxia was that important to my heritage and the heritage of so many Francophones. Officials later changed the name to Eudoxia in honor of the second son of King Francis I, Henri II, the Duke of Orleans. So the island was also known at certain points as Grande-Île, as Sainte-Marie, Saint-Laurent, for certain periods in the 17th and 18th century. And I tell you this so that when you're researching, if you come across documents or things that mention these different names, know that it is all the same. The early French settlers were attracted to the island because of the fertile soil. So in 1661, the first parish of Saint-Famille was founded, followed by another four parishes in 1679 and 1680. By 1685, there were 1,205, mostly French inhabitants, and 917 livestock. So you can see on the map on the bottom left of the island and its proximity to Quebec City. I've also included a map of the six regions. If any of you are doing research of this area, it's important to know the various villages of Eudoxia. And of course, the wonderful church that was not there when our ancestors were there, but is still present. It's fairly old, I think from the 1700s. So the family grows. So we have Marie Madeleine, who marries Philippe Le Tourneau and has two children, neither of whom lived to adulthood, and Madeleine herself died at the very young age of 31. Then we have Charles, and he is my direct ancestor. He married Marie Ursule Gendron and had 14 children, 12 of whom made it to adulthood. If you'll recall, Marie Ursule's mother was fellow fille du roi Marie Charpentier, who was profiled in episode 30. Elizabeth married Jean-Joseph Bellon and had two children. Her husband died, and she did remarry but did not have any other children. Now, the twist of life. After only 7 years of marriage, Marie was left a widow with three children under the age of five. When Jean died in between 1672 and 1673, we don't have a death record for Jean. What we do know is that Marie married Jacques Charrier de La Fontaine at Saint-Famille on the 5th of December 1673. Jacques was a master mason and stonecutter. But sadly, her happiness was short-lived as her second husband, Jacques, also passed away before the 1681 census, as did her daughter Louise. She was now 32 with four children to look after. Her son Jacques would also pass away after the 1681 census without a death record. Marie was to live on for another 48 years, dying in 1729 at the amazing age of 79. Her death record indicates that she is the widow of Jean Vallée, indicating she had not remarried after Jacques. Her only descendant is her son Charles. She was living in, as far as we can know, on Île-d'Orléans, but had to go to hospital in Quebec City. Because she died there, we can assume that she was probably sick and being treated. She is buried in the Notre-Dame-des-Anges Cemetery in Quebec, which is part of the hospital cemetery. And like I said, we don't know anything about her life, but we do know is that somehow she survived to continue to live. She endured and most probably, and I hope, found some happiness along the way. As for us, we can never forget Marie Martin. Even though her life with Jean was very short, their contribution, their son Charles, is part of their legacy. And on that monument in Île-d'Orléans is our fille du roi, Marie Martin, listed with Jean Vallée as one of the pioneers of Île-d'Orléans. So even though his time on Earth and their time together was brief, their contribution was very long-lasting, as their eight-times-great-granddaughter speaks to you today. And with that, I bid you adieu, and I will look forward to seeing you on another Fille du Roi episode, this time video number 36. Until then, au revoir.